Hi, and welcome back to the Mob Mentality Show. I'm your host today, Chris Lucian, and I have two guests here, Fred Zuhl and Kelly Gaines. And today we're going to be talking about a few things that they've been experimenting with. And so first of all, Fred and Kelly, why don't you go ahead and maybe introduce yourselves and talk about your experience with mobbing. Kelly can go first and then Fred afterwards.
Sure. I'm also originally from Chicago, moved to San Diego, and have been enjoying mob programming way of software development for the last almost 3 years now.
Awesome. And how about you, Fred?
Well, I'm a lifelong software developer. If I told you how long, you'd know how old I am, which is pretty old. But I am a little less than 2 years younger than my older brother, Woody, who many of you may know if you follow mobbing. And but I've recently come to be employed as a full-time mob programmer and enjoying it immensely and fully invigorated by it. And we'll be telling some of those stories today.
All right, fantastic. I've known you both for some time now. One thing that we were talking about a little bit is this concept of micro retro experiments. So maybe can you introduce the topic and talk a little bit about what you mean by micro retro experiments and the structure for that?
Yeah, what I'd like to do, Chris, is turn it over to Kelly to give a little bit of history in a real life situation where maybe this was birthed.
Yeah, absolutely. So I had just moved to a new team and Fred joined in, and we realized that when you switch up your team, you make up a new team. And that means you have to kind of go through the processes that you're going to go through with writing software and improving the process as you go along. So then this idea of regular retros, we've already had been experiencing it, but we wanted to refine it and really customize it to our team. So that's what we came up with. And I'll pass it back to Fred to kind of give a little bit of the description of our so-called parking lot and the evolution of that.
Thanks, Kelly. Yeah, so one thing that would happen in our mob is we would have ideas come, things that we needed to do, and realize really fast we didn't have and needed a parking lot. So we made a little place where we put the yellow stickies, but we realized after a week or two that we weren't really looking at those items, but they were still important. We'd unloaded our cognitive load, but found we were we're not dealing with those. So one time when we were dealing with them, we realized there was two categories of things on our parking lot. One were things we needed to do. They were just tasks that were being deferred. But there was a whole gigantic subset. They were sort of what some people might call your working rules or rules of engagement. And this category, we thought, well, those are important. Let's put those on the board somewhere. So we called them working thingies, because I didn't like the word rules. So we called them working thingies. And then we realized pretty quick that we kept putting more on there. And then we started realizing some of those we were referring to again and again. And I'll give an example. Here's one from one of our original. It was called Share Silly Ideas Freely. That was on our parking lot, but later graduated to our that list of working thingies. What happened is eventually we realized we wanted to visit these things a little more often. And Kelly, correct me if I'm wrong, we really didn't have a retro process at that point, not a regular one at least.
Not really. It was just let's talk about how things are going. And we decided to add a little bit more structure to it. But we also wanted to make sure that we weren't going to, sort of dread the retro process if we made it too complex. So we decided to keep it simple.
And what we did is we took the, I have a pattern that I use, which is where you keep things extremely simple. So we're going to do two, it was by then just Kelly and I. And I said, we're going to do two things, the thing that you pick and a thing that I pick. And she said, what was your choice, Kelly, in our retro?
I always like to make sure that we're enjoying the process, and so I'm definitely in tune to asking how people feel. You know, how do you feel about what's going on, and then that can drive our direction going forward.
Yeah, a lot of that can get lost in the normal day-to-day interactions, especially when you're absorbed by some other pressures outside. And having that empathy can be really a strong thing. So I can see how that could be really beneficial.
It's very much Kelly's area.
Yeah.
For this sort of a thing. I mean, she brought that, brings that to every team that I'm on with her, and we each bring something, and she's very strong in that. And so we cherished that. And she asked me, what's your choice? And I said, I don't want us each at least to pick one good thing that we can turn up. If we have a complaint, we have to turn it into a good that we can turn up. And this is actually our original sticker. I'll read it for those that are on the podcast that we created that day months ago. It says, retros, conduct after each break. How are you feeling? And some good we can turn up. It's a 2-point retro. It takes about a minute to do, and we do it after we come back from every break, or we try to anyway, or anytime we maybe change gears or anything. And so that's our original sticker, retros, conduct after each break. How are you feeling? And some good you can turn up.
Fantastic. I see a lot of mobs that I interact with. So at times they have retros in the timer. Sometimes they have formal or informal retros. Usually the ones that just take huge amounts of time are the ones that haven't retroed in a very long time, and everybody's kind of getting stuff off their chest. So I can see how frequent retros can reduce the cycle time of a retro and also alleviate a lot of pains on the team. So what did you learn from these experiments? Like, what was the outcome after you'd been doing them for a while?
Well, Kelly, before I kind of look at some of the data or so on, maybe you have some things you'd like to share.
Absolutely. So I feel like, just how I just said, I feel when we talk about how we're feeling, that automatically starts to build trust and psychological safety within our team. When we are able to freely share what we feel, that is half the battle to making sure that we're fixing things along the way and turning up those good processes. So that I feel like is ultimately has been key. And it also kind of, helps keep the flow and helps you address those things early on.
Would you say that a lot of the benefit is related to empathy, or is it some other aspect of it?
Absolutely. It's related to empathy. And if you don't know how your teammate is feeling, how can you understand, and maybe see through their eyes what's going on? Because you could be, and we're all guilty of this, kind of having your blinders on and you're in the mode of writing code. And you're not really, you're just kind of in that tunnel vision view of things, that this helps shed that tunnel.
Or also somebody may actually think that somebody is feeling bad when they're not, right?
Yeah.
And you might be, walking on eggshells when you shouldn't be, or something along those lines, and creating all kinds of miscommunication. So being transparent with your emotions can really be beneficial as far as empathy goes and for being understood, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Super cool.
Yeah.
And so, go ahead, Dan. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, any more to build on that as far as the structure of the experiment?
Yeah, so Kelly had brought the feelings into the group, and we never recorded those. Mm-hmm. We never marked them on a board or anything, but the turn up the goods, that was the evolution of our little board, where we had the little stickies with some of these patterns. Do the Google was one of them. Share ideas freely, bite-sized pieces. These were some of the examples. And what would happen is we would put the sticky up on the board, but then we go, during a retro, I might say, I want to do turn up the good on do the Google, but we already had do the Google up there. So what we started to do is marking it, so what we began to do is take those yellow stickies and move it down into our retro results area. So these weren't action items, these were just the things we wanted to turn up the good. And what I realized is that I wanted to record which ones we picked the most. So what we started doing was putting our little yellow stickies into a bag. So here's one of them was a mob pattern experiments. Here's another one, do the Google. I'm going to show you. Do the Google. Nice. What we did is we wanted to say, well, make it easier. So what we started doing is I'm going to show the video audience. We would take the little bag. We put our stickies in a bag so we could draw up these little foam stars that our very kind manager let us buy at Michael's. And we would put the stars in there every time somebody said, oh, my retro item, I'm going to turn up the good. Do the Google. Nice. And so the ones that ended up with five, because those are a lot of stars, you know, if you get five stars, you take out the stars and you put a heart.
Nice.
Now, if you got two hearts, well, that's one that's obvious. So one of the things we started learning is that some of our type items, for instance, were do the Google. Like just, yeah. If don't stumble around trying to prove what you know, just jump on Google. And we have a team member named David who was really a pro at that. Right. We turn out to him a lot. Oh, another one is reduce the cognitive load. Mm. So that would mean, you know, like for instance, clean up our whiteboard. Often that reduces the cognitive load. Another is bite-sized pieces. You know, take it a little step at a time. These are things that we found helped, or that when we didn't do, we needed to turn up the good. Another one is that everyone who's needed is there. So we bring in our stakeholders often. We'll bring in product owners from marketing or from operations. And that just have them join the mob and work through the problems with us. And that again and again has worked out. And Kelly, maybe you have a quick story about how we've not only brought in our people to join our mob when we need them, but they also join this process, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah. And they're always, you know, the nice part is, you know, the fact that this is a simple process, you know, there's not a lot of investment on their part, except talking about their feelings and, you know, and kind of identifying what worked well for us. So, and just a little example recently, we had someone that is really useful on the domain side to help us with databases. We had her join our retro after our work was done. And what she actually had talked about was that she had fun. You know, so then that was kind of a hybrid of a feeling and a turn up the good, you know. So then that generated a new sticky. And another thing that I was thinking about, you know, speaking of the fun factor, so we have these stars and we have these hearts, you know, it's kind of a currency exchange of turning up the good.
So yeah.
It's gamification. I mean, how fun is it to have little game type tasks in our day to and then that's something that is refreshing and kind of you know, keeps us engaged, because who doesn't like a good game? And this is
yeah, so like what happens, do you ever have moments where either you don't have the turn up the good item come up at all, or somebody's unwilling to share their feelings? I'm sure the hardest part for our audience of this to understand is maybe like, what's the level of comfort with these experiments on your team? And if they have people that are maybe emotionally maybe challenged, I guess, do you have any advice for them or anything along those lines in getting to a place like this?
I'll turn it to Kelly in a second, but I'd like to say first that usually what we do when someone joins our mob temporarily, we first model it. So one of us will go first, and then we give them the option to go any time after that they want. And we've never had anyone that I know of, Kelly, refuse to do it.
Yeah, everyone's been really willing.
Yeah, cool. Okay, so that reminds me of kind of the psychological safety writings and things along those lines. It's like it can't exist unless somebody goes first. And so, you know, this idea that you must have the bravery to model the vulnerability before others will be vulnerable. And then a lot of the time it's a big relief afterwards. And so I think this to me sounds like another story that very strongly models that. So calling out good things that are happening or having people express their emotions. And so, you know, at least my advice to the audience would maybe be that having people that are willing to model these things, and kind of going back to the diffusion of innovation type stuff too, but if you have people willing to be vulnerable and can show others that they're vulnerable, then a lot of good things can happen out of this. You know, very much so out of this story, it sounds like as well.
Actually, Chris, absolutely. I think we make it easy for that very thing to happen, not only by modeling it when we have a visitor and modeling how simple, you know, and easy it is to do and unrisky it is to do, but because they have a board or a full of colorful stickers that have simple phrases mm-hmm. on them, they don't have to invent something. They look at the board and say, hey, I like that one. I want to put a star on that one. And we make it very easy for them to take this a low risk step.
Nice.
Yeah. And it's demonstrating by example, because sometimes it's, you know, they can't formulate their thought until they see something. I mean, that's how I work sometimes too, where I can't really pinpoint it. And then, oh yeah, that was sharpen your saw. Yes, we were doing that. We were hitting the pause button, you know, going back to see what we could do to make, you know, rapid cycling of our work of debugging an issue even better, you know.
Fantastic. You know, you've gone through lots of turn up the good kind of type things. And do you find that, like, you know, turning up the good and just talking to that, what can you tell the audience about? Has that ever gone too far and you had to ratchet it back or anything along those lines? I think when I encounter skeptics of kind of that turn up the good mentality, you know, there's this idea of there's too much of a good thing. So, like, what are your experiences there, and what can you talk to from that extent?
Maybe I'll jump ahead just a touch into the future here of what we're doing, and that is to say that we had experimented a little bit with this with some of Woody's mob experiments he's been doing online remotely. And yeah. I had a little group that I was mobbing with four people, and I asked them, can I experiment on you guys? And I introduced this. And I don't know if the video audience will be able to see this, but this is the screen. Can you see that?
Yeah, a little bit. Not really.
Okay,
not
so
real well.
It's my same little board with the hearts and stars, except the stars are asterisks, and the text are things that I typed in that people would say along the lines of, you know, turn up the good. And all of them participated, creating pretty much from scratch the same kinds of things that Kelly and I had come up with. One was flow. That was one of ours. Another was TDD. We never had that one because I'm not sure what, but do the Google was in there. Micro retro often, they wanted more micro retro. And so, but one fellow out of the four couldn't say his complaint in a positive way. So what we did to help him is we listened, and then we restated what he said as a turn up the good. He was complaining that we weren't following what the stakeholder in the example had asked for. So we asked, are you saying maybe that we need to keep looking at the stakeholder request readme file? Oh yeah, that's what I mean. We turned that into the keep turn up the good. Keep looking at the stakeholder request. Nice. And he was happy as a clam, and there was the list. And then people started putting stars on that one.
Fantastic. So yeah, so there's this idea that turn up the good isn't necessarily just only look for good things to improve, but if you have something negative, you're looking for the item, the action that will, if it's increased, possibly relieve the pain, if there is pain around it. And so in that, that's a perfect example of that. So in any way, it gets people thinking about solutions rather than problems.
Absolutely.
Yes, I think, and in answer to your question, I don't think we've had anyone ever not be able to join in and recognize those good, or I think that was the only time I've seen that where someone couldn't, they struggled with it, but we were able to help them through. That might be the only time.
Yeah, and I remember some of the ones that we've had in the past when we've had retros. I know that there is a sticky out there that says, read the error message. I know sometimes, oh gosh, it seems like we look at something and we just dive right in without looking at the simplest thing. We are, you know, just really overthinking what the potential solution could be. And then, you know, we realize a little bit later that the error message told us exactly what we needed to do. And so, you know, there's that type of turn up good that, oh, okay, so we were a little bit weak on that area, so let's do more of that going forward. You know, so it's that type of turning up the good, you know.
Things go well when we look at the error message. Last time we didn't, but I like it when we look at the error message. Let's turn up the good by looking at the error message more.
Exactly. More or pausing for the bird's eye view. That's another one of ours where it's like, okay, let's make sure that all of us, all three of us are on the same page with what we're trying to do, what we're trying to accomplish. And that's been really good as well. So we say, oh, it's all good. You know, our retros aren't necessarily just raising up the good. It's okay. So what did we recognize that we need to raise up the good going forward? Yeah. You know, that we didn't necessarily see, you know, during that last, you know, since the last retro.
All right. Awesome. So you alluded a little bit to jumping ahead. So we can go and hit that topic right now, which is what are you doing to continue the experiment? So you talked a little bit about the remote sessions. Is there anything more that you want to say on that?
The word remote, the idea that, just as with everyone else, our employer asked us to work from home, because even if some people have to work from offices, when you can work remote, you should, because that slows the spread. So we had to get really good, really fast at a lot of things, but this is a very visual thing, the stars and the hearts and the stickies. I mean, when you see it next to you, you might even grab a star right in the middle and do a retro. I mean, just so first we had to create a board, which we did using Teams. What's it called, Kelly?
It's Planner.
Planner. And so we would put little
Microsoft Planner, right?
Yeah, Microsoft Planner. And we'd put little emojis for the hearts and the stars. And we started having fun with that. It's a little cumbersome to use, but we're getting used to it. And we drag them over from, you know, the working thingies over to the retro items. Then when we're ready for our next retro, we move them all back to the working thingies, and then we drag a new set of them over to the retro items, you know, our action items. So there's that, just going remote. So another was introducing it in other places. So we shared it at the San Diego Open Space, actually paired with another person who wanted to talk about micro retro. So we were basically the example. We've brought it, like I said, into Woody's space there online. That's one aspect. And the other aspect that's new, I think, going forward here is the tool is a little cumbersome online. So in my off time, in my weekends and nights, I'm starting to write a tool that I could maybe use on an app or on maybe cloud-based that we could actually do exactly this, but using a tool that's tuned for it rather than, you know, using an editor of some sort as we've had to do recently. Nice. And with that in mind, I'm thinking lots of things I'd like to see in it. For instance, I'd like this to pop up. We sometimes forget, right, Kelly?
Yeah.
It pop up at the end of the mob timer. Yeah. Boom, here's your retro. So you go take your break, and when you come back, you're going to do the retro. Another would be that.
So all of the mob timers that I know about, they're all open source. So it's possible you could have the retro in the mob timer too.
Yeah.
Well, we could add it to an existing mob timer, maybe put a plug-in architecture on the mob timer.
Yeah, exactly.
And another thing coming, I think, is the idea of, Kelly will talk about this one. I would like to measure how these things are emerging over time. Right now, we just have a bag of stars. This one is, you know, 20 stars, but is there a curve? Is this one that's dying out? Is there a new one that only has a couple stars, but it's growing fast? So if we did this in software, we could track that.
Nice.
Kelly, the feelings we have not been tracking, maybe you can talk a little about experiments we're starting to do with that.
Absolutely. So just this week, you know, we were brainstorming on, we have this data that's building for these working thingies that we've accumulated. We haven't really been tracking moods or what our feelings are. So I think it was actually Fred that had mentioned something about colors. You know, can we associate colors with the feelings that we're feeling? Right. So then we thought, oh, well, these mood rings, oh, they have mood ring charts out there. We wanted, again, to keep it on the simple side. So there's just, you know, a set of maybe eight to 10 colors. So now we're going to quantify by logging. And, you know, we haven't determined the system quite yet, but we're going to start tracking how we feel, or, you know, pick a feeling off of the mood chart to see, you know, and kind of discover the trends, and, you know, compare that to what we're working at the time, and all of that data will be useful going forward.
Yeah. And that was something that I thought about in the past too. So, you know, we do 6 month happiness retrospectives and things like that for the team. And then there was another idea for like IoT buttons that you would press at the entryway and exit of the door. Obviously that doesn't work in our current context, but the idea of like regularly checking in and then seeing how things are going. That's super cool. And graphing it over time, that could be a really interesting thing. Temporal data is very fun to look at and helpful.
Absolutely.
Very cool. Well, this is all a very interesting story. And I guess if you have a message to our audience about, you know, either things that they should try or things that they should go look at, or publications that you have, anything like that that you want to talk about, we could take a couple minutes for each of you and just, you know, you can point people to resources, whatever you like. So go ahead.
Kelly, do you have anything?
Sure. I think, you know, it's funny. So I've actually only been retroing in this format since, you know, joining the team, and for the last few years. I'd never even heard of this, you know, type of meeting before. And it's
a retrospective in general, right?
Yes, absolutely. And it's really revolutionary. So I would, you know, first and foremost, go check out the retrospective book by Diana Larson and Esther Derby. I forget the title, but
Agile Retrospectives. Yeah. And we'll put the links in the meeting notes.
Thank you. That one was a good guide. But also keep it simple. Baby step into this process if you're completely new to it, because it's less daunting and you'll actually be encouraged to do it. And I love the gamification that we've done. I think that does keep it interesting. So then with that, I'll pass it over to Fred for his nuggets of wisdom. Yeah,
I don't have a resource to point to. I'm a longtime developer and coach but I don't have the resources that I, like my brother does a lot. He's got lists and lists. But what I do offer is abstracting things out to simplest. And this is what I just encourage. No matter what you're doing, but here in the retro, let's speak, but no matter what, keep it simple. Better to get 80% of the way there with two simple things than have a very complex set of retros and action items. I guess I can end it with this story. One of the first things I did when I joined the team, maybe within a week, is I cleaned up a whole bunch of curled up papers. Those, you know, those paper things that people write on with stickies on them and writing on them from years and years back. And I found them underneath tables and behind whiteboards and curled them up and threw them away. They had no meaning. But all I need to do is grab one of these that has the most stars in it. And if somebody said, what's the most important thing to your team? I could grab three of these little bags at the top that have the most stars. And I could say, these three things give us biggest bang for the buck. And we're done. So keep it simple.
Absolutely.
Keep it simple. Keep it down to something that anybody will join and consider fun, and you're probably miles ahead.
Fantastic. All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us. And to our audience, if you think that you know somebody that might find this helpful, please be sure to share it with them. And thank you for joining us, Fred and Kelly. And we'll just say for everybody watching the show, until next time, our co-host will be back soon, so don't worry. He hasn't disappeared forever. And we'll see you all later. Thanks again. Bye.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.